from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in June with the passage of the City of Rochester's budget. As part of the approval, all 12 police officers who were stationed in Rochester City Schools were removed from buildings for the 2020-2021 school year. Local community activists had been calling for the removal of school resource officers, or SROs, from Rochester campuses for some time. And that call has been echoed in districts across the country. They escalated following the killing of George Floyd, for example. Advocates for removal say that officers make students feel unsafe, and they can criminalize students, often students of color. Those who support the presence of police in schools say that well-trained officers can help students diffuse conflicts and address issues like drug and alcohol use. This hour, our guests discuss the issue from a number of angles. If police are removed from schools, should funding be diverted to other efforts like providing counselors or working to eliminate implicit bias among school communities? What does the research say about the presence of police in schools? Our guest this hour will discuss it. Eamon Scanlon is an education and policy analyst for the Children's Agenda. Eamon, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Jacarl Hill is with us, associate coordinator at Teen Empowerment and a recent Rochester City School District graduate. Jacarl, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here, Evan. Thank you.
And welcome to Tony Michiquet, a former Monroe County legislator and a former candidate for mayor of Rochester. Tony, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Evan.
All right, so let me start with Eamon Scanlon. When we look at this issue, you know, we can look at events just from this week. I mean, on Tuesday, the Los Angeles Board of Education approved a plan that cuts a third of its officers from the L.A. School Police Department. We can look at a lot of different cities primarily where this is happening. Give me the argument for taking SROs out first, Eamon.
So if we think about police presence in schools, it's part of a larger phenomenon known as the school-to-prison pipeline. And it's a movement over the last several decades to really criminalize youth, particularly students of color, in ways that they are monitored, are policed within school buildings, that often leads to them being suspended at higher rates, dropping out of school. And then we know that, for instance, in New York State, 3/4 of all state inmates in prisons and jails are actually high school dropouts. So that's why it's called the school-to-prison pipeline. And one of the big goals for many advocates and activists across the country is the removal of police to have less youth police interaction and reduce those opportunities for criminalization, for arrest, and for altercation. And this is a huge victory here in Rochester. Still, the big urban districts like Syracuse and Buffalo have police within schools. And Rochester really was at the forefront of having this movement to remove them. And a lot of that is thanks to the community coming together and really pushing for this. It didn't happen overnight. It took many years. And we can talk more about, you know, what are some of those negative things. But really, the acceleration of this issue is based on the headlines. It's obviously the death of George Floyd, the tragic death and murder of George Floyd. Daniel proved locally the incident with the young 9-year-old girl who was pepper sprayed. And we actually forget that back in May of 2020, there was also the arrest and handcuff of a 10-year-old girl on Route 104. So this is a recurring issue of negative interactions between police and youth. And simply removing police from buildings prevents that from even being possible.
Let me ask Jacarl what the school experience was like and how you see this issue. How did it sort of feel and impact your life as a student, and how do you see it now, Jacarl?
Personally, I haven't been a student since 2015. But what I will say as an advocate for the youth and listening to their experiences and what they feel, what they say is, like, one on top of what Eamon just said, they don't have a relationship. They don't see the police as a resource, as people who actually do them a service. When we said the community pushed for it, that was also the youth. And now when they see police officers, when they see the police organization, they think survival. They no longer look at it as like, oh, it's just an SRO in our school. They start to think for their lives because all of the trauma that they experienced, we had young people out there who were in the protests, who have this firsthand knowledge now. They're not going off preconceived notions. They're not going off narratives. They're going off of being out there and seeing how things happened, knowing how things happen, knowing how it feels. So when we get to talking about how they how it feels in school, to go from being in the hallways, interacting with your friends, to seeing a police officer, like knowing that you have an innate instinct to want to get away, avoid at all costs. That's not comfortable. That's not safe. That's no place to learn. That's no place to strive. And the young people do see the police as a threat, whether or not it's acknowledged as that. And they haven't even had time to recollect and really judge all of these situations for themselves. They have no choice in this matter. You know what I'm saying? I don't. For me, it's like, why aren't the young people having a decision? Why aren't they having this conversation when they're the ones that's going back to school? People are making a decision for them and pretty much forcing them to be put in a position to relive some of that trauma. Like I said, it was these young folks out here with their peers, with their colleagues. Some of the young people work with us. A young lady got arrested at the age of 14, and her mother and father as well. So when you can have that experience outside of school, and then you bring somebody that represents that same organization that will arrest me and my parents for standing up for social justice, how do I feel in that school when I've seen people get, like, 2020 doesn't get erased because it's 2021 now. Those experiences are still fresh to these young people, still fresh in their minds. They don't see the police as an ally, and to try to force them into that situation with no choice in the matter, that and saying, how do you feel about that, but disrespect it.
But, Jacarl, is there any sense that yes, mistakes have been made, but as the mayor of Rochester has said, and as the police chief of the city of Rochester's department has said, that there is a desire to do the work of policing better, to work with communities, to train the officers better, and that ultimately, if that training is successful, if that reform is successful, then the presence of officers in schools might make students and parents and staff feel safer. Is that possible to you?
I guess the criteria for how you determine that success would, one, it couldn't be gauged by the police and the organization. It would have to be gauged by the people. With that includes the young people. Because yes, those things are possible. Those things can happen. But the thing about it is, those things happen and are kind of like, it's like a little too late for the young people, because like I said, they already have this. So now they have to rebuild, like there will have to be a rebuilding of relationships. You know what I'm saying? It's not just about the training being better. They have to be able to trust. They have to be able to trust, and they're not going to trust somebody just because they say their training is better. How do the young people, you know what I'm saying, what do you tell the young people? This is successful. This is better. These officers are trained better to understand you, to know what you go through. Young people still are worried about, you know what I'm saying, how they're viewed. You can never truly know.
Well,
so yes, those things are possible, but at the same time, it has to resonate with the people. It has to resonate with the, you know what I'm saying, with the community.
Okay.
Not just people saying like, oh, this is a better program.
Okay. Yeah. Tony Michke, how do you see this issue?
Well, Evan, I feel bad that the gentleman feels that negative about police presence, but how do you build that trust if you don't have a physical presence of an officer there to build the relationship? Because that's what it's all about. Officers don't just enforce the laws. I mean, they keep people safe, but they also build relationships. They provide advice and mentorship. When I went to school, I was friends with many of the officers that came to our schools, and they set the example. They gave us someone to emulate. If one of us was out of line, it didn't result in an arrest or anything on that level. They provided the advice and, mentorship to fix the problem and tell us, don't break that window, pick up that trash, you're better than that kind of thing, because we had a relationship with these people. the physical crimes are way up across the country. I mean, just in this city alone, shooting victims are way up, double. You have homicides are up 20 over last year from 32 to 52. Physical crimes are so far up that I think our first priority should always be to ensure the safety of our children. And you can't do that if you don't have a presence there. So, I mean, I've had positive engagements. Are there people that fall short? Of course, in every walk of life, whether you're a dentist or a realtor, or there's always someone that doesn't quite cut it. But for the most part, I think officers really care about their children, about their the neighborhood themselves and the city.
So let's talk, Eamon, a little bit about what we've seen in terms of evidence, because I know that you feel like when you want to look at actual data on the impact of policing in schools, it's somewhat limited on the actual sort of empirical and collected data side. A lot of it is observational, as you've said, rather than maybe a little bit more rigorous, collected, analyzed. But what have you seen in terms of studies that does push you in one direction or another, Eamon?
So, you know, first, definitely there's not some consensus about what is the effect of police in schools. Generally, you could say there isn't good evidence that they make schools safer. And I know that's the main concern of parents. When you want to have police in schools, it's about safety. And there just isn't really good evidence for it. There are some studies that may show that, but not in a rigorous way or not scientifically proven. And then there are others that show the opposite. And one of the best studies that was done very recently in the Journal of Policy Analysis and Management by Dr. Emily K. Weisburst from UCLA showed a number of negative effects on students in Texas when there were grants given to certain schools to hire more SROs. And then they compared those to schools that didn't see that increase. And what happened was a lot of the things that we talk about with the school-to-prison pipeline was an increase in disciplinary incidents, so they were 6% higher, and a decrease in graduation rates by 2.5%, and then subsequently a decrease in college enrollment by 4.5%. Now, that's not causal. That's not a one-to-one. That's just an association. But this has been seen in a lot of places that simply the presence of police sometimes leads to a more prosecutive environment where there are harsher discipline held meted out to kids, and that leads to them falling behind in their classes, often not graduating, and then not going on to college. So it's on the net probably a negative for kids. Beyond the anecdotal, there is some evidence to show that it actually can be harmful. And then so we have to step back and say, well, why are we putting police here? What is the thing a police officer can do that a school counselor can't, right? If it's about relationships, there are people trained to build relationships, to help kids deal with their issues at home or in school. Why are we diverting money to the police department, which has other very serious work to do that doesn't involve schools? And also just to say, you know, there are some great school resource officers. There are some great people that do that work, but you don't have to be a police officer to impact the lives of young people to be a positive influence. And so, again, the question is, what is the value add of the role of a police officer in a school versus another just caring adult?
Well, and so what about that, Tony Michike? What is it that you think officers need to be in schools to do that others like counselors can't do?
It's not that officers are the only ones that can impact and provide leadership, but they do. And you think about it, if there's a safety issue on the school, they reduce that response time dramatically because they're there. You don't have to wait for someone to come. It increases the visibility, which helps, you know, to keep drugs off the campus. People feel safer when there's an officer in the area or present. It tamps down violence because, let's face it, there is a lot of violence at schools. It to me, it's real community policing. You have officers engaging, building relationships, talking to them, letting them know that there's different paths in life, and, you know, here's a path that may work for you. Those relationships that are built are not just between the officers and the students, but also between the teachers and the parents. An officer can set the example for a student. This is what you can do. You can give back to your neighborhood by becoming an officer or a fireman or a teacher. And to me, I think it increases the graduation rates, because if it keeps violence down, then the kids are going to want to come to school. And it may be the only place in a neighborhood that is safe for them to walk to school. You know, I respectfully disagree with some of the data, but I think it's more of a positive than it is any negative.
Okay, so let me ask both of our other guests how they feel about that point. I mean, Eamon, that was a direct rebuttal to your point, so I'll start with you, and then we'll go to Jacarl. What do you think about what Tony's saying there, the examples they can set, the relationships that officers can build?
You know, again, it speaks to the maybe some certain individuals, but systemically, if we're hiring hundreds and thousands of police officers across the country to be stationed in schools, you know, what is the broader impact beyond some great folks that may have individual impacts? What is the broader impact on students? And the data shows some negative impact or no real impact at all. So is there a better use of those resources? Because it's not necessarily free. In most cases, a school district will contract with their local police department to provide that person. And, you know, a police officer plus benefits is quite expensive. You know, that can run here in Monroe County, you know, $100,000 per officer. So that is money that could be put into another reading teacher, you know, support for an after-school program. There are other uses of those resources, so it's not just in a vacuum. And if we don't have evidence that this makes schools safer, because that is the main concern, then why are we doing this? And it's not clear until we can show that this does, in fact, improve school safety in a meaningful way, and that is what parents want, and that outweighs the negatives, because there are real negatives. Then this is just not a good use of resources, and it's having a negative impact on students, like Jacarl can speak to.
Jacarl, you want to add to that? You know, when you hear Tony say that that officers can provide a good example, that they can build relationships, that they can, you know, not just provide safety, but the kind of relationship building that leads students to see different paths for their own future. You know, I certainly take it that you don't see it that way, but what do you say to Tony when he's kind of presenting a picture of policing in schools that looks like that?
I wouldn't necessarily say that I disagree with it. Like I said, it is a possibility. But on the flip side of that, when we're talking about especially urban schools that are predominantly with students of color, that is not how they view the police. And if they, you know, say we're talking about relationship building, like these young folks, they feel they have their teachers, keep those teachers that they built relationships with. They had their workouts, they had their protests, wanted to keep them teachers, and they still got cut. So that's a layer of that. You know, say also these very things can be implemented into the community. So it doesn't, those officers don't necessarily have to be in the schools. If they're out there, they can interact with the young folks out there. You know what I'm saying? It may not be as a controlled environment, but when you, like I said, you bring that into the school, there, that's not giving the youth the opportunity to make a decision for themselves. If they don't view the police as somebody that they can look up to, but somebody to be fearful of, for whatever reason it may be, whether it be experience or just seeing the things that they have seen, that's what it is. And you, like I said, you're taking that away. You're taking that away from them to one, make that decision, but also to give you an idea or a possibility of a whole different approach that is actually healthy for them, one that makes them feel safe just as well as keeping the school safe.
Tony, what do you think? Before I get to the phones, let me just ask, I'll ask Tony to respond to that, and then I will start taking some phone calls because we've got some emails and calls. Listeners, if you want to weigh in on police officers in schools, we'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or email us connections@WXXI.org. Go ahead, Tony.
I would like to ask both gentlemen if they ever had a positive interaction with an officer in a school. And yeah, if so, how was it? And the other end of it is, you're talking about the cost of an officer, but if you look at something like Newtown or what happened in Florida, and those officers are there to protect those children, that's invaluable. You can't put a price on that. The other thing is, if they're able to interact with a child and he's, you know, let's say he's going astray, he's going the wrong way, and they're able to get him to stay in school and to become somebody instead of a statistic, to me, that'd be money well spent. Go ahead.
I'll say something first. And what was it that you said? Yes, I have had a positive interaction with a SRO when I was in school, Officer Moses. Thank you. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not speaking from personal experience. I'm speaking from, once again, how the young people are viewing things based off of their experience and the knowledge that they have, you know what I'm saying, that their emotion towards police as well. And then you want to say anything?
I would agree with Officer Moses. He is a fine man.
Indeed.
Yeah, and I would agree as well. And I know Moses Robinson, and he, I echo that. And there are many, you know, great police officers in this city and beyond. And so that's not really what this is about. And speaking to the issue of, you know, the very famous school shooting in Florida, that tragedy, it's well known that the school resource officer who was there did not engage with the shooter, actually hid and walked away. And that is not to say that that would happen in every incident. But there was a study done by the FBI related to school shootings, and they showed that, you know, it was very, very rare when police were present that they were able to engage with the active shooter. Often the shooting would be over before they responded, even when they were on site. So, you know, it is priceless, but unfortunately, and again, the data does not show that the presence of police, it's not a movie. It's not everybody gets to play the hero. They are not really able to prevent school shootings, and we have to look at other measures when we think about ways that we can reduce gun violence. Simply stationing police is not proven to be an effective strategy.
Okay. Can I add to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
I know when I was chairman of public safety for the County Ledge, I had talked to many officers that were able to intercept weapons coming into the school or stop teenagers from fighting and hurting each other. That, you know, I'm sure there's data showing the other way, but I know this personally. You know, go ahead.
No, I guess if why don't we do this here? I know there's there's some agreement, but there's a gulf between some of the guests on the subject of police officers in schools, and we've got some listeners who want to join the program on the phone. Let's go to the phones after we take our only break of the hour, and then we'll come back with Eamon Scanlon, education and policy analyst for the Children's Agenda, Jacarl Hill, associate coordinator at Teen Empowerment and a recent Rochester City School District graduate, and Tony Michike, the former Monroe County legislator with the background, as you just heard him mention, working with those in public safety. He was also formerly a candidate for mayor of the city of Rochester. We're coming right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we welcome the new music director for the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. Andreas Delfs joins us talking about his joining the RPO at a time of transition, what he sees as the next steps for this orchestra as eventually the pandemic winds down, they find new live audiences and hopefully younger and broader audiences. We'll talk to the new director of the RPO next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Andrea in Penfield, first on the phone. Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi, I'm calling because I'm a study school teacher and I have had nothing but positive experiences with the SROs in the various high schools that I've worked in. Officer Moses does beat them all because he actually used to come into my high school classes and teach about personal responsibility and being helpful to several students. The kids that I have seen that have gone to see Officer Moses were being sex trafficked through Backpage.com. I have seen him work with kids that were sexually assaulted for domestic violence situations, and it was way easier for students to be able to access a police officer in the building rather than going to a police station. In addition, the other SRO have been trained and do often de-escalate situations. It is not the same, perhaps, in other areas, but the Rochester City SROs did a fantastic job, and I'm very sorry that they will not be here for the next year.
Okay.
The other thing is, Carlo, I would like to say I do like DeCarlo's idea that it would be great. Why don't we survey the students and the staff? This was a budgetary thing. This really wasn't anything else at this point.
Okay. Andrea, thank you. So let me ask our guests. I'll just go down the line. Eamon Scanlon, you want to start first? What do you think of that?
Well, you know, we're talking a lot about some great individuals, but we don't want to also ignore the negative things that have happened. You know, there was a police report for incidents at RCSD from 2017, and, you know, I've shared this with you, and this is a public document that shows the frequent use of pepper spray on students back in 2017, and multiple incidences where students were handcuffed for getting into altercations, sometimes not even violent ones, just threatening. So there is sometimes positive, but there's also lots of negative. There's lots of things and that happen where kids are traumatized by the presence of police, that if police officers simply had not been there, they wouldn't have been pepper sprayed. They wouldn't have been handcuffed, because these same types of incidents could be handled many different ways. Mm-hmm. So we have to not look at this in a vacuum as a pure positive. There are some very real negative consequences for kids that happen on a regular basis. And it's not such an anomaly for a child to be handcuffed or to be pepper sprayed. Simply the fact that there was a video of it is what has raised that consciousness in our community about the seriousness of these interactions.
Okay. Jacarl Hill, you want to respond to what the caller said? Go ahead, Jacarl.
Indeed. There's no, you know what I'm saying, there's no doubt to what SRO can be capable of, but I think what's happening is a lot of people are referring to what was. Remember, you know what I'm saying, we have to remember that school has been virtual. The young people haven't been physically in school, and in the midst of that, a lot of stuff has occurred with, you know what I'm saying, with the police, which has fragmented and led to the mistrust between youth and the police. So regardless of what SRO is capable of, if the young people don't see them as a resource, if they don't look at them in that light, that you feel me, that's exactly how the young people are going to move accordingly. They will be more reluctant to go to an officer now based off, once again, the experiences that they have, the trauma that they have experienced, and the things that just have been a reoccurring thing, as Eamon said, with these, it's something that just recently happened. So this is stuff that they are still soaking up that have to do with the police. So it's just a matter of the young people not seeing the SRO as a resource, but more as something to be on guard about.
Tony Michike, what do you think?
I think that the use of physical force would be always a last resort. I would rather be able to reason with someone and try to talk them out of a physical violence, an altercation. But you can't do that unless you have a relationship to establish the communication. So that's why I advocate for SROs, because they're there and they get to know each student. They get to know the situation. They know that there's personality conflicts. They're able to resolve them before they get to the violent stage most of the time. I won't say all the time, but most of the time.
Well, and Tony, you said earlier that let me read an email from a listener who keyed in on something you said earlier. Earl writes to say, one thing that has struck me is that Tony said, I disagree with the data, and I think this is a real problem. He has an idea of what can happen, what is theoretical, but we have to rely on valid data. What is happening? It seems to me that the real issue is trust. The trust has been broken with communities of color, and until it is somehow restored, school resource officers are not a wise use of those resources or funds. Tony, can you respond to Earl?
Yeah, I was speaking specifically to the data that was mentioned. Obviously, there's tons of data out there. I'm just the one particular item. I just don't see that in my 8 years of being in government and involved with officers. And I've walked this entire city when I ran for mayor. I listened to people, and one of the biggest complaints was that the school system has failed Rochester. We're number four. We're number 432 out of 432. We are dead last. So I listened to many complaints from thousands of people in 2017 when I ran, and their children's safety was the number one priority almost always.
Okay, but Tony, I think what Earl is saying, and maybe what Jacarl is saying, is that, you know, I think everybody wants safety for students. But what the students, and particularly I don't mean to say monolithically, but particularly students of color are saying is that right now, given the current climate, given recent events, given all of the challenges of strained relationships, SROs don't make us feel safer. It makes us feel less safe. That is one of the messages, I think, that is being sent. And I guess I'm asking if you honor that. I mean, like, is that something that you're hearing?
Of course. I take the opposite view because, again, of all the parents that I've talked to, the legislation that I've been involved in, all the committees I sat on, I mean, I'm still sit on many boards, and the overall majority of it is that they prefer that there would be an officer there. So that I'm just relating that from all the interactions that I've had in the past 10 years.
So can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead, Jacarl.
So Tony, does that mean that the youth don't have a choice in the matter, that how they feel that doesn't contribute to the idea, I mean, to the final decision that's made?
Of course, everybody has choices. This is my opinion, and, you know, you have yours, and we're all entitled to that, but when I ran for mayor, I wanted schools to become a hub of services, and from police to medical, and our current mayor has picked up on that, but so far, 4 years later, we got two signs on Goodman and on Ridge and Lake saying that a police department's coming. And by putting it back in the neighborhoods, it was in part was to protect children, the neighborhoods, the people. I think having an officer in proximity really enhances everyone's safety.
Whether
you can build a relationship, that's up to the officer and the students to engage.
Yeah.
But I just think in proximity, that's a good thing. That's all.
Let me just follow that point, because, you know, you're right that there has been talk about new substations and new police presence in different neighborhoods. And Tony, I mean, I certainly understand that, you know, just talking to people like Dr. Ashad Altimer and others who really understand research and data pretty well, there's a wide range of feelings among a wide range of communities in our city about who wants more police, who wants less, who wants reformed police, who wants none at all. I mean, I understand it's a wide range. But I want to ask you, Tony, just about one specific idea about in schools. And I guess I want you to clarify two points for us. Had you become mayor of Rochester and you had a little bit more say here, what is an ideal, like how? What do you want in terms of police in schools? How much? What is the right number? And tied to that is this question. When there is a teacher having an issue with a student, Is it more likely, Tony, that if there's a police officer in the building, that that student doesn't just get disciplined or have a conversation or maybe sent to an office, but actually arrested? And if that arrest happens, we could see suspension. We could see people dropping out of school. We could see someone with a criminal record. Is it more likely that if officers are in school, that will lead to more arrests of teenagers? Tony.
I would take the point that if the officer is there, it would never escalate to that level. I think, you know, just having the presence makes a huge difference. If a child is acting out, you know, he can call in some medical professionals to try to talk to him. If he's really trying to hurt himself or others, maybe he might have to restrain him, at least until the situation calms down. I don't want to see any child arrested. I don't want to see any child in handcuffs or anything like that. But again, safety is the major concern here. So I think having an officer there actually helps avoid that by being having a presence and being able to communicate with that child and put them on the right direction, if at all possible.
Okay. Jacarl, does that sound realistic to you?
Realistic? Yeah, but not for the Rochester City School District. Once again, you know, keep reiterating the fact that young people don't see a police officer as a resource. They see him as a threat. That's how when they see them, they remember everything. They recollect everything. Some young folks might even have panic attacks when they see an officer based off an experience that they have with him. So once again, to have that in the school is eliminating the opportunity for the students to have a say in the matter and to move on the accord of knowing that they're safe and that they feel safe, because you can keep the school safe and then the students don't feel safe. That's not, like, once again, that mentally, plus all of the strain that they've already experienced, that just adds to it. And that was real life time, because some of them are going back to school with the mindset that they have to catch up, that they kind of, you know what I'm saying, that they fell off because they were so used to being in person. Now the virtual learning wasn't really good for them. So some of them have to play catch up. Some of them are getting ready for college and whatnot, and having that presence in the school does not help them mentally. It doesn't help them focus, because once again, when they see a police officer, they think black and brown students think survival now. They've seen people get their lives taken for unjust reason and unjust acts that they think survival. They don't just think that there's a police officer in there. They see a threat. How can you operate knowing that there's a threat? That's intimidation. That officer being there to de-escalate, young people can de-escalate situations. We've seen it. They have counselors, they have teachers, they have people who can receive these same trainings to make sure that these things happen. And there's police presence in so many neighborhoods. There's some in the neighborhood around the school. Like, it may cut down the response time of them actually physically being in the building, but they also have, like I said, they have the cops around. They can still use it. They can still make it. But those situations, once again, can be de-escalated if the young people find ways to feel safe in the building and to create ways to help each other. Everybody is wondering all of these scenarios of what if the worst happens. If these young people come back and they automatically start doing violence, start committing violent acts, that's thinking the worst of these young people. Some of them want to go back to school to learn. Most of them want to go back to school to learn, to get control of their future, because they know how serious it is now. Putting somebody there for that is just the just in case. But once again, you got to think the worst is going to happen for that to even need to be, especially when these kids are traumatized by the very people that you're trying to put in their school.
Eamon Scanlon, what do you think?
Well, you know, bringing us back to the data and, you know, the actual impact of police in schools, there was a study in 2012 by the New York City School Justice Partnership Task Force, and they were looking at, you know, what was the impact of police in schools, and they found that for black students in New York City, they were 14 times more likely to be arrested than their white peers by SROs. And this is something that has been shown in studies in Connecticut, in Alabama, that there are often 10-to-1 ratios for black and white students when it comes to arrest in schools. So there's a huge disproportionate impact on students of color, particularly black students and black males. And this is what fuels the school-to-prison pipeline. It's this presence which leads to a disproportionate impact and, you know, pushes a lot of these kids out of school. So limiting that interaction, limiting that possibility, eliminating that possibility is just a net positive. And we have to look at the numbers. There was a study by ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, of U.S. Education Department data from 2015-16, and looking at the availability of services to students, they found that 10 million students attended schools with police but no social workers. 1.7 million attended schools with police but no counselors. You know, we're moving towards more resources in policing than we are towards things that we know students need and have an evidence base behind them in terms of the impact. You know, we know what will happen and what will be the impact on a student of having a counselor, of having an additional tutor or math teacher. We don't really see a positive impact that we can prove from having police. And oftentimes we see a lot of negative things that come with that. So if we're going to follow the evidence, if we're going to follow the research, we need to invest in other things. That's clear. And that's why many districts throughout the country are doing this. That's why LA just last night reduced their SRO force by a third, so they could reinvest that money in counselors, reinvest that money in things that are proven to help kids.
Let me take some more feedback from those on the phones. Shalinda in Rochester next. Go ahead.
Hello. My name is Shalinda Bowler. I'm also an associate coordinator at the Center for Teen Empowerment. I was calling to kind of just I agree with Carolyn and some of the things that Eamon was saying. I'm also a RCSD graduate. I graduated in 2017. And I kind of just wanted to talk about, like, my personal experience, you know, being in the RCSD and things like that. Also, being a foster care youth, you know, going from the RCSD to a suburban school. And noticing the distinct differences. I personally feel like SROs and SSOs shouldn't be in our schools, you know, partially because of what was said already. There is this fear that black and brown youth have based on not only what's going on currently in the world, but just the history of youth and police or people of color and police in this society as a whole. And so, you know, I also did a lot of work alongside, like, HUE, Alliance for Quality Education, Citizens in Action, and Teen Empowerment, and the Kyle and myself have did some focus groups, you know, talking to youth from all of these different schools, even school faculty staff, principals, teachers, and stuff like that about, you know, what are some of the things that they feel they have a problem with in the schools. And one of the main things that came up was the fact that the SSOs and SROs are in the schools. They feel like they need them, right? Me personally, I wasn't a kid to, you know, get into a lot of stuff, but I know the effect that even had on me. It is very intimidating. It does make you feel not safe, you know what I'm saying, after a certain point, because when you see, you know, you might see that one SSO or SRO. I know a lot of people brought Moses up. I personally had a lot of positive experiences with Moses, but everybody's not a Moses, you know what I'm saying? And so a lot of people tend to go, you know, based off of those few, you know, positive interactions, when overall a lot of negative things have happened. Like, for example, you might see that same officer outside of school and they might not treat you like, you know, they might just treat you like somebody out in the community because, one, they don't have those relationships with you. They don't. So we would like that. We would want that to be a thing. That's not a thing. Doesn't, you know, it's happening like that. We don't even have, like, sessions where the SROs, SSOs, actually sit down and talk to these youth and figure out how to bridge that gap between, you know, community and policemen. We don't even have that, you know. So it is.
All right, Chalinda, we're losing the call. So why don't we when I let Tony respond to some of what Chalinda had to say first. Go ahead, Tony.
I agree that not all officers are reaching out to students and to teachers and parents or anything like that, but they should be. The other thing is the social workers and counselors, I never said that they shouldn't be there. If anything, probably more. You can't fix something if someone isn't engaging, and you got to be there to engage. And that's my only point.
Jacarl, do you want to add any to what Chalinda said?
Yeah, first off, appreciate you, sis. What I will say is that off of what Tony just said, actually, you have to have a way of engaging. Because, yes, we can have those counselors, we can have those, you know, saying the SRO in there. But the question is, like Chalinda said, how do you bridge that gap? How do you start to create that? Like, do you sit down with the youth? Do you talk to them? Because a lot of, you know, saying mostly the SRO police officers in the Rochester community don't actually live in the city. So there is no, like, interpersonal connection to begin with. You don't know the community. And then to come into school where there's going might be kids from the east side, they may be from the north side, or they may be from the west side in that school. The cultures are very different. Different things mean different things. Things that words mean different things to young folks. So even how do you even train or say that training is successful if the young people are there to gauge whether it's successful for them?
Well, we have probably more phone calls and emails than we would have time to address here. And I do want to offer Eamon just some thoughts on where we go next year, where you see this conversation going, you know, sort of how permanent you think the current decision is, Eamon, and what you think needs to be sort of top of mind going forward.
Well, you know, a lot of it will depend on how successfully we sort of fund alternatives and things to make sure that we have safety, that we meet students' needs. This pandemic has been such a tough burden on families and students, and coming out of it, there's going to be a huge need for kids, for mental health, for support, for all the things that have happened. But if we look back, you know, before 1998, RCSD Rochester didn't have SROs for over 100 years. They didn't have police in schools. There are schools in the city, private schools and Catholic schools, that have never had police in schools. It is not something that you need to have, and for the vast majority of the history of public education, that has not existed. So we can get to that place. We just have to keep furthering this conversation and make sure that we remind ourselves that we can make schools safe in other ways, that we need schools to be about education, and moving away from this criminalizing of student behavior to really supporting them, to investing in things like restorative practices, counselors, social workers, relationship building, the things that decrease violence and not simply reacting to violence in very punitive ways. So I'm very hopeful for the future. This was a lonely fight 6 years ago, and we've really come a long way. But we need to keep the momentum. We can't just be reacting to very upsetting videos. Mm-hmm. We have to really sit down, look at the data, and know what is the impact that this is having on kids, and why are we doing this.
All right, Tony Michke, about 25 seconds. Keep it tight. Go ahead.
I'll just say it was nice to meet both gentlemen, and thank you for having me on today. I think we brought out a couple good discussions, and hopefully we can move forward.
30 seconds, Jacarl Hill. Final thoughts from you. Go ahead, sir.
Likewise, Tony. Appreciate you. Thank you, Evan. Thank you, Amy. Definitely don't appreciate the conversation. I would say after we look at all of the data, remember about the youth are still there. They mean something. If it's about their safety, they should have a say in the matter.
I appreciate all of our guests. Jacarl Hill, Associate Coordinator at Teen Empowerment and an RCSD graduate. Jacarl, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Tony Michikay, former Monroe County Legislator. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, sir.
Eamon Scanlon, Education and Policy Analyst for the Children's Agenda. Thank you, Eamon.
Thank you. Everybody be well.
And just want to just say again to listeners, this is just one of those conversations that just loaded on feedback from the community, and I suspect it's hardly the last we will have of this conversation. More coming up on Connections.